real estate company, certainly not one of the biggest in Manhattan, as the Times demonstrated. But it's, you know, it has some impact on some lives. And he's so unconcerned about the impact that he has on some lives, whether there's any positive element to it, that I don't even think he's fit for that. But I think he represents not just a danger to America, but because we are such an influence in the world, it's really a shocking threat to the world. And so, you know, I'm in a sick bed a lot, but he gets me up out of it.
Wayne Barrett, investigative reporter who worked at The Village Voice for 37 years and continues to report. Juan Gonzalez and I spoke to him last week at his home, where he's largely been confined due to his battle with lung cancer. Wayne Barrett's biography of Trump was just republished as an ebook. It's titled Trump, the Greatest Show on Earth, the Deals, the Downfall, the Reinvention. Visit our website at democracynow.org to watch, listen to, or read part one of our interview with Wayne Barrett that we ran last week. We have several job openings, a news producer and a senior video news producer, as well as an office coordinator. They're all full-time jobs based here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Juan Carlos Davila, and Pedro Rodriguez, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Paul Huckabee are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prove, Ariel Boone, Vesta Goddars. I'm Amy Goodman. Again, our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll take a look at the recent rash of terrorist attacks in Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Bangladesh.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 16th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, a two-day zine conference and social gathering on Saturday, July 9th and Sunday, July 10th in Portland. From 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. on Saturday, there will be tabling and workshops at the Ambridge Event Center, located at 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Then, on Sunday, July 10th, from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m., there will be workshops and a Skillshare at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, located at 1001 Southeast Division Street. Again, that's the 16th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, Saturday, July 9th, and Sunday, July 10th. More information about Skillshares, speakers, workshops, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO for a 25-hour fundraising extravaganza of special programming and community celebration. Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman recently spoke in Portland on Democracy Now! 20 years covering the movements changing America. KBOO will broadcast this inspiring speech at 10 a.m. Again, that's 6 a.m. on July 14th through 7 a.m. on July 15th to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Tune in every first Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock for Transpositive PDX.
We are a radio collective seeking out news, information, and discussion within Portland's diverse populations of intersex, transgender, and non-binary communities. On July 5th, we'll have multiple guests, including local doctor Angela Carter. We'll discuss hormone replacement therapies and how they affect our bodies and minds.
We will also talk to Detroit's trans woman rap artist, Amber Byers, also known as Detroit's D-Slim.
That is on Tuesday, July 5th, from 6 to 7 p.m.
Find us on KBOO.fm.
And on Station 90.7, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. proud to support KBOO. Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
Liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople.
No, you can't go back to Constantinople.
Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks.
Well,
good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. And you and I have an under-the-surface argument about how I'm not serious about all the horrors of today.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of a behind-the-looking-glass introduction to this show.
Well, I just I have a very bitter and dark view of the world.
Yeah, that's becoming increasingly clear to me.
Well,
you think after almost 10 years of this, that would have become clear to me already.
Yeah, you'd think. I mean, I think everything's, you know, and I can't use that word.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, this is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. As you might expect, my name is Abe. That guy over there, the cynical, bitter, grumpy one, is Joe. And today we're going to talk about, building off last week's conversation in which we described the exit of Britain from the European Union as evidence that the post-war order in Europe is fracturing. We're going to follow on that and talk about how the entire world seems to be in a state of realignment at the moment, particularly the Mideast.
Yeah, and I'm going to focus a little bit at the beginning on Turkey, because I think it's a key player in all of this, not paid attention to by the United States public.
Mm-hmm.
I want to remind people you can call the station or talk to us at 231-8187 and on the internet tubes.
Yes, at Facebook. We're at facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can also send a tweet to @HonestAbe72. Now, before the show began, we were talking about this recent rash of terrorist bombings in Turkey, in Saudi Arabia, in Bangladesh, and in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little disagreement about how those ought to be interpreted.
I'm not sure it's about the interpretation.
About the interpretation.
I think it's more about my attitude.
About your attitude.
I have a bad attitude.
Yeah. I viewed these as essentially tragic events.
I do too.
Regrettable. Yes.
But that's our argument. We have no argument.
Well, that's true. But you also said they were kind of funny and that they were kind of ironic.
Oh, I think it's hilarious. I think it's this is the ugliness of Western colonialism come home to roost, based on an absurd set of religious ideas, essentially promoted by what I consider to be mad opportunists, not good followers of Islam at all. But this is what happens when you have injustice piled on injustice piled on injustice throughout the history of a region. And we, that is the United States, by its invasion and two wars in Iraq, created ISIS. No question about it.
Oh, I don't dispute that.
So I think that's funny. Sorry.
Okay.
I think it's funny. I don't think it's funny, haha. It's funny, sad, horrible.
Yeah, it is sad.
It's still funny. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Turkey.
But wait, one second, though.
Oh, okay.
So we had something interesting also happen this morning, in that we got a phone call before we even went on the air. And that caller is still hanging on.
Wow.
So let's... I want to hear what this guy has to ask us, even before the show begins.
Let's
hear. Jim, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My voice isn't very good, but can you figure out what I'm saying?
Yes,
certainly.
Okay, I have a question. My question is this. Do you think that America is worth defending?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Why is it worth defending?
Because I live here.
Yeah, because I also live here.
Because I grew up here, because I find the landscape very beautiful and the people very interesting and multinational, and I think that's kind of cool.
I'm not being funny. My question is really valid. But
no, it's a valid question. I was trying to answer you seriously. I'm sorry I'm not coming across that way.
Yeah, that's all right. It sounds like it was rather self-centered, thinking that I want my own butt to be cared for, but can we seriously think that America is worth defending? We've done so many bad things in the world.
Hey, you mean the idea of America, America's historical record, the America the place, America the culture? I don't know.
Yeah, all that stuff. Do you think that America is worth defending? Or
yes.
Or should we just let it go down?
It's worth defending. Now, that's different than the expansionist intentions of nation state.
You have to
make a distinction. You really have to make a careful distinction.
Okay, and I'm with you on that. So my third question is the last one, and then how should we defend America then? If America is worth defending, how can we defend it rightfully?
Well,
because we are being threatened.
Yeah, we definitely are being threatened. How serious that threat is, it's yet to be known, but it is a serious threat. Anyway, I think you're asking an interesting philosophical question as well as a political question, and we're going to treat it seriously in the course of this conversation.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and so I'm gonna hang up, but I'm waiting to hear something really positive and very suggestive from you guys about America. That's what I'm hoping to hear.
Okay.
I'm hoping to hear an answer which will work for us.
Okay, the Grand Canyon's nice.
Thank you.
Yosemite. Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, well.
Oh, that's an interesting challenge. I didn't know we would have that challenge.
Let's see where it goes.
I'm going to continue on with what I was going to do.
Turkey.
Okay. And I want to talk, this is really important because this is really about how we got where we are today.
Okay.
And rather than deconstructing the history of the United States, which I certainly have done some and would be willing to do again, I do want to look at this. I want to focus in on this. Just remember that Turkey was part of the, before it was Turkey, was part of the vast Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Turkish peoples that moved into Turkey were relatively recent, post AD populations to a large extent, coming out of what would today be Russia and Persia and other places in that region. And that movement of Turkic peoples and the Turkic languages really was accompanied by vast changes in climate, including the drying up of Lake Baikal, and of huge struggles that went on in the region continuously as power began to increase among the Mongolian peoples.
Hmm.
So, you know, this is really, really an ancient civilization by our standards. In the 15th century, the last Christian holdout, remember that the Roman Empire split into two parts, and that one capital was, that first the major capital of the Roman Empire was Constantinople.
Istanbul, named after not Constantinople.
Yeah, named after Constantine. Hmm. And he built it a magnificent city, and they held on as Rome itself collapsed.
It wasn't the capital for a while, though.
No,
it was just another trading and military.
Yeah, but it was a very important place.
Indeed,
very important.
It was a later emperor who.
And Constantinople, under the leadership of Constantine, was then the head center of the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire maintained itself, getting shrunk over and over again as Islam rose, and was finally overtaken, and it was. essentially, that event changed the shape of the region. The rise of Islam, which was a largely a enormously significant dynamic, turning toward a monotheistic religion and toward a system of trade and exchange and education and all kinds of surface and more than surface developments, was very, very important. I'm going to skip ahead, though. In the First World War, Turkey joined the Central Powers. The Central Powers were the Austro-Hungarian Empire, German Empire, and Turkey. The Byzantine, which was now known as the Ottoman Empire, and it was largely Islamic, with ethnic communities dotting it, that were some of which were Christian, some of which were other religions. There were the Kurds, many groups. At the end of that war, a very evil treaty was made, and part of the Treaty of Sevres, which was part of that process, broke up the Turkish Ottoman Empire forever and parceled out places that are now known as Syria and Lebanon and Palestine and so on as individual nation states, Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya, all of which were part of the old Ottoman Empire. So Turkey's powerful base of nation states was really seriously reduced. In the meantime, a rising Turkish nationalism took place. And during that nationalism, there was an effort by the Turkish leadership to create a Western-style nation. For example, they abandoned the customs of Islam in many, many ways, including the Arabic language and Arabic lettering. They moved to a Roman-style lettering like we have. So that really, there was an enormous change. They outlawed certain kinds of costume, which were traditional in the region. They tried to change the nature of the incredible, we use the term Byzantine bureaucracy, but that's what it was, and that was what they broke up. Meanwhile, there was the rise of a guy, Kemal Atatürk.
Yeah. And, well, and they also formed a secular government.
They also formed a secular
very
government.
Very important.
Well, except that nominally Islamic. But yes, secular government. And in the process of this, got to understand this. And meanwhile, there was the rise of the Soviet Union. In that context, there was a notion that there could be a region which would be Armenian, largely, that would be a Trans-Caucasus nation state. That did not happen. Instead, the Soviet Union grabbed off a bunch of territory, and Turkey maintained and grabbed off territory. And Turkey engaged in what is still denied by Turkey, a true Holocaust against the Armenian people. More than 1 million were slaughtered. It was horrible. It was kind of the precursor to the enormous horrors of World War II. But in that process of that division of that region post-World War I, we created the nesting places for all of the nationalist and Islamic fundamentalist feelings that we are now experiencing. That we, the United States, because we have always exploited the oil and always made deals with these people and always saw them, by the way, as an opposition potential to the Soviet Union during the Cold War. We set this situation up. We really did. Now, we went ahead in most recent times to have two wars amazingly, in Iraq, neither of which was a wise idea, and now continue unendingly. And the form in which they continue, this is my argument, you may not agree with it, the form in which it continues is a peculiar combining of a Islamic fundamentalist resurgence within a context not of Islam per se, but of a very, I would call it reactionary, fundamentalist Islam that ISIS represents, that believes in a notion that came out of the struggles of Muhammad, going way, way back, to make the entire world Islamic. And these people are serious, and they are deadly, And they believe that taking life in the name of this struggle is perfectly legitimate. And we are engaged in a battle with this force, though we would like not to be. At the same time that that's going on, there is a rise in Europe and in the United States of an enormous anti-Islamic movement, and I think it is a movement, that is essentially trying to legitimize the potential for what I would call endless war, religious war, really. That's the situation I think we're in.
And which, ironically, would hand this extremist wing of Islam exactly what it most wants.
Yes.
Which is an endless war against the West.
Exactly.
You know, I should retract that statement. That divide, speaking of these Islamic jihadists as making war on the West, I think is a false divide. Islam is a Western religion. The Middle Eastern cultures are predominantly Western cultures.
Well, I think that distinction is not so important. Why are you making that the significant thing?
Well, because I think that by making that distinction, it enables the anti-Islamic movement, as you call it in this country, to paint the Islamic terrorists as not part of Western culture.
Oh, I see what
makes
you're
it
saying.
Easier to otherize them, and thus makes it easier to justify endless war against them.
Well,
so that's a false division in this context.
You know, that we are playing the same game as these as this relatively minor element of Islam is true, and it is horrible. I think it's also important to understand that Turkey is that peculiar place where East and West coexist. That Turkey, for example, because of the interests of the West, became a member of NATO, mm-hmm. gets a lot of weaponry from us. We buy a lot of oil and so on out of that region through Turkey. That NATO membership and its membership in the European Union, that whole phenomenon, is played over and over in our history. But what also is interesting, when I went to several sources, older sources, on the history of Turkey today, just kind of looking around, I discovered that the Armenian Genocide had somehow been left out of, these are old-fashioned books, but they're still real, the World Book and the Encyclopedia Britannica. No mention of it. Hmm. No mention of it.
Hmm.
So that led me to thinking a little bit about it. Now, if you go online, more modern sources do talk, or will, many of them, talk about the Armenian Genocide. Turkey denies that it ever occurred, but it did occur, and there's no question about it. So more than 1 million people were raped and murdered by Turkey in the effort to westernize and to create a solid Turkish state in the region that we understand as Turkey. In the course of that also, war was made on the Kurds. It was not as strong a genocide, it was not as thorough. But the Kurdish people are still attacked and are forced into a war, I think forced is the right word, with Turkey, which goes on now. So the Kurds, who I actually have a kind of an emotional connection with the Kurds, nothing really logical there, but I see the Kurds as caught in this horrible vice that we and all the Western nations created in the region, much of it coming out of the struggle with the Soviet Union, ironically. Remember that Persia, that is Iran, was essentially taken over when it was a democratic republic, a real republic, taken over in the years following World War II and turned into the Shah's regime to provide oil for the Anglo-American oil company and to block the movements of the Soviet Union into that region, which the Soviets had been engaging in for a long, long time, especially during World War II. So what we end up with is a repressive, terroristic regime under the Shah with its Savak, which tortured people and did horrible things to maintain power, overthrown eventually, and then established in that region, in reaction, I think, a fundamentalist Shia state. Shia state, now note that, is very different in its belief setup from the kind of Islam that is followed by nations, by the majority of people in places like Lebanon and other parts of the, and certainly Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, meanwhile, for Western reasons, becomes a very powerful country because it has enormous oil resources and the Saudi religious leadership decides to create schools, madrasas, all over the Islamic world, Indonesia, all over, Philippines and so on. In these madrasas, a certain kind of fundamentalist Wahhabi, I would call it, Islam is taught. It is very strict. It is very, like Christianity in its expansion, very much pushing for expansion of its particular beliefs throughout the region, believing that whatever methods are used are okay, are not un-Islamic. So we see this struggle being carried out, and into that world, into a world in which there's fundamentally a religious struggle going on, which has great importance and great meaning for a large number of people, into that we walk naively, stupidly, and essentially over oil, and find ourselves ensnared in a terrible situation, complicated by such things as the reality of the creation of the Jewish state of Israel and our support for Jordan and so on. This is a horrible, horrible situation. Now, you get upset with me because I say it's funny. It's funny in an ironic and ugly way. I don't mean funny, ha-ha. I mean funny, okay. Peculiar. But it is real. It is very important. The denial of the Holocaust that was precipitated by Ataturk's government, the move from the old-fashioned Ottoman Empire to the modern Turkish state, with its change of language forms and so on and customs and so on, that was an enormous and important effort by the Turkish government to create a Western modern power. That Western modern power becomes a pivotal force after the end of World War II and the beginning of the struggle between the Soviet Union and the United States. And we have armed Turkey. We have supported Turkey. Turkey has played enormously complex games in the region. Turkey slaughters regularly and sees as its enemy the Kurdish people. The Kurdish people are the only big ethnic community left in the world without a nation state. I mean, this is an amazingly bizarre, terrible, but I think in an awful way, very funny situation. And I think it's really important that we stop as a nation having some fantasy about this. I was listening to Bill Maher, mm-hmm. you know, on television with his rather simplistic show, and he is anti-religion in general, but specifically on a rant against Islam. And he characterizes all of Islam because the fundamental idea of Islam, he says, is the expansion of Islam, ignoring the fact that the fundamental idea of Christianity is the expansion of Christianity. These are the two Western religions that push for conversion always as part of their faith. And these are still in a kind of a meta-conflict, an unending conflict that allows ordinary people to get really crazy behind religious beliefs. I'll stop with that for the time being.
Okay.
Cheery stuff, huh?
Indeed.
Ha ha.
Let's go to the phones. Jeremy, good morning.
Oh, wait, Jeremy. I want to apologize for something that happened last week, actually.
Thank you.
I want to take a little sidebar here.
All right.
Somebody called last week, I don't remember who. Somebody called and used an ethnic slur against African Americans. And I didn't catch it at the time. It was the ending of the show. And I think that was terrible. And I think we should have, first of all, blocked it out with our dump button. But yeah. Second of all, we probably should have apologized for it. And I really feel embarrassed about it.
Now, we should note that this term was used ironically and in context. It was not being used in a derogatory or hateful way. But better just to avoid such things entirely.
Well, I think that there's too much racism anyway, and for us to allow let slip such a term is unfortunate. Okay.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Jeremy.
No more J words on your show, huh?
Well,
anyway, it's such a, you know, esoteric and arcane and
kill the dog,
but
man.
But it might be. Yeah. Anyway, so first of all, as someone who commonly finds something to criticize in what you've said from the left, you're still the best hour on KBOO. And this is possibly, I'm hobbling around my house with a dying dog and a severe cellulitis infection.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get better. He's not. He's got a.
Okay. Well, anyway, get to your point,
anyway,
Jeremy.
Here's the point. You're interrupting me in mid-massive compliment.
Okay, I appreciate a compliment.
You should get this. And if I type better, I would do it myself. A transcript of 10 or 15 minutes there after I finally sat down. I'm nowhere near as old as you. I'm 63. You know, and nowhere near as well educated. But I'm very old and very well educated, and I learned a lot. And, I know almost nobody who knows more than me on this subject, although I admit I'm totally ignorant. But I thought this was just spot on. And then, amazingly, Abe's criticism, which you took, was good. So it was fabulous, fabulous radio.
Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess my only comment other than this log rolling is the key concept for me as an anarchist. This socialist, communist, anarchist type,
mm-hmm.
is nationalism will kill us all. It's a shirt I make that I wear to demonstrations. for 20 years, as a someone Jewish on my dead parents' side, I'm real unhappy going to, pro-Palestinian rallies because all of the ethnically Palestinian or similar ethnicities are often fully involved with their own self-nationalism. And they see that as a positive step, as I see it as all murder. And that the only way we can get out of this, and there's an old neo-anarchist group called Socialismo ou Barbarie, Socialism or Barbarism.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that it's more like, nationalism will kill us all. Because, I don't see any, as horrible as human beings have been throughout all recorded history to each other, certainly the last 4,000 years since they started murdering each other, I think that's vaguely when we time it from, it got a whole lot worse once we started having nation states. I mean, in some ways, yes, there's been some peace since World War II that's now being threatened, but mostly things got a lot worse when we had countries. And the potential to destroy the planet through nuclear war is overwhelming.
Yes, so, and still likely. Jeremy, we run out of your time.
Thank you so much. And
thank you,
keep
sir.
Up the good work.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Got a special announcement here.
Oh, special announcement.
On July 6th, 2013, 47 people were killed in Quebec, Canada, in North America's deadliest oil train derailment. As part of the annual U.S. and Canadian observation of Stop Oil Trains Week of Action, Oregonians will gather to remember the lives of those who died there with spoken word, visual art, and music. This is taking place tomorrow, Wednesday the 6th, at 11 a.m., from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Pioneer Courthouse Square. This is sponsored by the Climate Action Coalition. So those of you who oppose oil trains, which I hope as all of you, there's a chance
I don't
to come
know.
Say something about it.
I think oil trains are fun.
No, you don't.
Okay.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk radio program. We're talking about the ongoing, often violent realignment of the world political order that seems to be happening right now. It's kind of crazy.
Well, it's very crazy, and we have we have an election coming up. Also kind of crazy, and I don't want to spend time on that, but I have to mention it because the weirdness of it is such that we are, as a nation, being led way more astray than usual.
Yeah, this is true. We're talking about how the violent extremist wing of Islam right now that is embodied by the Islamic State that is bombing major population centers across the Mid East and into the Asian subcontinent of mm-hmm. late.
And potentially the U.S.
Yes. Wants nothing more than an ongoing holy war against the nominally Christian Western states. And we have a major party nominee in this country who wants to give them exactly what they want.
Or he says he does.
He says he does.
He'll say anything.
Yeah, this is true. 503-231-8187. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. And you can also send a tweet at HonestAbe72.
Yes. I think it's really, I want to be clear on this because, first of all, I find an enormous, within myself and emotionally, a kind of bitterness about the unending stupidity of the behavior of the leadership of this country and of the Western powers in general. And I don't want to exclude anybody else, the horrors of the government of Turkey, the horrors of the government of Saudi Arabia, which, as I said earlier, has really promoted this fundamentalism, this Wahhabism, all over the world, using money which essentially comes out of the oil industry, which essentially is about the Western powers. And all of this, with its ironies and its bizarreness, does mean the death of millions of people, the ignorance of millions of people, and in general, a threatening situation in an industry which ought to disappear entirely, which is the petroleum-based economy.
Let's go to the phones. Harry, good morning.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
I'd like to respond to your first caller about defending America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't need defending. We're usually the aggressors. Look at all our wars. We're the aggressors, except for World War II, when the Japanese attacked us. I was listening to a C-SPAN, and they had a book about President Roosevelt, and they met, and we.
Is this the second Roosevelt, FDR?
Yes, FDR.
Yeah,
and he was talking about that. We entered the war in December 7th, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
But in July of 1941, before we entered the war, Roosevelt ordered the U.S. military to invade and occupy Iceland. And I said, I've never heard of this before. And so I'm trying to do more research on this. Have you ever heard of that before?
No. I don't know about invading. I know that the United States occupied Iceland to defend it against the power, particularly of the U-boats of the Germans. And it was a strategic move to secure the Arctic region.
Yeah, but Iceland was a sovereign country. That's what this author was saying.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Okay. Also, you also mentioned about the Holocaust with the Armenians.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. The League of Nations, after World War I, convicted two of the major generals of Turkey and gave them the death penalty. That's why the League of Nations kind of broke up. And both these leaders were assassinated by Jewish extremists.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it's in the books that they've been heard about. Also, after the Soviet Union broke up, Armenia had a war with Azerbaijan.
With Azerbaijan?
And, yeah. There was a section in the middle of it that was Armenian.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Armenians did, they split the country in two, and they wouldn't allow UN relief, and over a million people starved to death.
Hmm.
And talk about Holocaust all the way around the world, and still going on.
I think I agree with your comment. I mean, I think that we single out, because of its enormous horror and because it was such an attack on an ethnic and religious community, we single out the Holocaust, the Shoah, against the Jewish people in Europe, mostly because we have this peculiar prejudice that Westerners don't do things like that. Well, yeah, they do. So that's important, and I appreciate your comments. I haven't looked into the Iceland thing, but I will.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
Yeah. Iceland knocked England out of the European tournament, by the way.
Out of what?
Out of the European Championship soccer tournament.
Yes, I know. I like that.
The men's tournament.
And the guy went crazy. I heard him.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory, speaks on Water is Life. At 10, Chris Andrejos, Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints is off today. We'll hear Law and Disorder, which features journalist Chris Hedges discussing how American foreign policy contributed to the Brexit vote and the ensuing economic turmoil.
You know, he's really worth hearing.
He is.
He's so brilliant.
And reading as well.
Cool guy.
At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D.M.A. Roberts focuses on the Asylum Lab, a place where professional actors and directors can explore classical theater in a gym-like setting. Because what's more conducive to theater than a gym-like
setting?
Well,
what is it? Does it involve basketballs?
I guess you'll have to tune in and find out.
Does it involve kickball?
Pumping iron, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know. This is being developed by director Elizabeth Huffman, and you can learn more at 11 here on KBOO.
Good idea.
And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews Mary Beth Graybill of the Portland Art Museum about their current show of Chinese woodblock printing. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, indeed. Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
Who's next? Corey, good morning.
Uh-oh. Oh, Corey got tired. Hi.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Let me get you up to speakerphone. You'll sound better.
Yeah, yeah. Please.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So I think that you guys have drawn kind of a false equivalence between Christianity and Islam.
So, when?
Oh, today. I heard you.
I don't recall us equating either of them.
I want to defend Michael on this. I do see certain similarities.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
So I just wanted to say that there are significant differences. It's true that in the past there was a lot more primitive stuff like converting heathens by the sword to Christianity. Mm-hmm. But here now in like the 20th or 21st century, I mean, how many Protestants do you see going and setting off suicide bombs at the Vatican? I mean, you know, the world of Islam, you know, think of Christendom and Islamdom, you know, the two different worlds, mm-hmm. are at vastly different stages of development. You have a significant fraction of the world of Islam that has just not evolved to, you know, and it's not every Muslim, obviously, has just not evolved. I mean, if you had the choice.
Not evolved? Are you really talking about evolution of humans here?
Well, I don't mean biologically. I mean culturally. But I mean, you know, if you had a choice of, I'm going to make some art that insults a religion.
Oh, why?
You could do like, what's his name? Mapplethorpe did this thing, Piss Christ, where he had a crucifix.
It wasn't Mapplethorpe.
No, it wasn't. But I know the piece you're talking about.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Anyways, okay. Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, so, you know, no one was coming after whoever that was to kill them. You draw a cartoon of Muhammad, and what happens? You know, there's a significant difference there.
Let me
just say one last thing about
that. Okay.
There's even a reason why the evolution has been slower for Islam, which I learned by reading the works of Bernard Lewis. Moses died before he reached the Promised Land, wasn't allowed to get in there. Jesus obviously died before there was any Christian nation. Muhammad established a religion, and then he ran a society. And as a result, everything Muhammad did in the running of a society, like, you know, banks can't charge interest or think of anything of that sort, carries the weight of divine revelation. So it was a lot easier for, you know, render unto Caesar, that thing from Christianity. It's a lot easier for societies to change when the fundamental rules of them weren't established by the founding prophet of the religion.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's take just a moment and point out some of the similarities between Islam and Christianity, shall we?
Yes.
They're both what are known as religions of the book. They are both patriarchal, in some cases extremely oppressively patriarchal. They both stigmatize and tabooize sex to a great extent. They also both demand conversion, and they both delegitimize followers of other faiths. And small, and I have to emphasize this to a huge degree, very small subsets of their worshipers are willing to conduct violent acts in order to either advance the umbrella of their faith or to attack perceived opponents of those faiths. You see this we've seen this very recently, and indeed it's the topic of today's show, in cities in the Mideast and the Asian subcontinent. And you've seen it here recently in the United States in attacks on abortion providers. So there are a lot of parallels. Now, through the haze of cultural paternalism that Michael stirred up there in his phone call, he started touching on this notion of relative stages of cultural evolution. I don't really even see the point in following that line of reasoning. To say one culture has evolved where another one is not, by whose yardstick do you measure such things? What advantage is there in those sorts of comparisons? As Engineer Steve just pointed out, Islam could be considered in many respects an offshoot or an evolution of Judeo-Christianity. You get nowhere in making these sorts of comparisons, except, and I think this is where Michael may have been trying to go with this, to justify one culture's actions at the expense of another.
There's another aspect to this that I think is very important, which is the propagandistic aspect. The two different... I'm a little bit uncomfortable with characterizing Islam as one thing, first of all. It is multiple sect, and of key of that is the disagreements among Shia and Sunni. But in fact, it is a powerful religion which offers solutions to many of the existential problems that human beings face, which is why it has been so successful, not to mention the fact that it has used militant use of the sword to conquer. So has Christianity, though, and we shouldn't forget that. Now, I think it is very, very important that we not engage in an assumption that the great struggle of today is about religion. It's not. The great struggle of today, in fact, is about resources. And the United States stumbled into an incredibly dangerous situation under the leadership of idiots like Dick Cheney. And that's really, really at the root of what's going on right now. Going back in history to the founding of this country, yesterday was supposedly the day of Declaration of Independence, even though it was really the 2nd of July. If you read the Declaration of Independence, two things stand out in it. The first is that essentially the argument against England has two roots. First of all, the idea that the English are encouraging the freedom of the African-American population in the United States, that's really embedded for the soon-to-be United States. And the second one, the fact that England, in making negotiations with Native American groups coming out of what we call the French and Indian War, which is the Seven Years' War, basically against France, that we made agreements that we white folks would not be invading Indian turf. And therefore, the British made a rule to limit the expansion of Western interests, of white interests, in areas ranging from Massachusetts to Virginia. And in that process, limited the potential for vast wealth on the part of the class of individuals who were really the founding fathers. To ignore those two facts is to ignore the actual historical relevance of the most important things about the founding of this country: the slaughter of its native populations, and the enslavement of African peoples. These are really, really foundational and really still things which we have not come to grips with. That's all.
All right. So to sum up, I think Michael's contention that Islam and nations who predominantly follow Islam are less culturally involved than the other Western nations is bunk.
Well, I think it's just a very naive way of looking at things.
Agreed. Let's go back to the phones. Steve, who's next? Paul, good morning.
Good morning. So I want to go back to a little bit ago. Somebody was saying something, I forget what. But having to do with the xenophobia amongst the Trump followers and then the Brexit. Mm-hmm. And there's almost a little bit of it amongst the Sanders followers. But the thing is amongst the Sanders followers, there's a little bit more awareness that the economy just ain't working. And the economy just ain't working because of globalization. And we got Ron Wyden and Earl Blumenauer, and people should be writing them and calling them every day promoting globalization is shipping the jobs overseas. You know, Freightliner has a huge, huge factory back in North or South Carolina, one of the Carolinas that's several times the size of the one on Swan Island, and it's running at less than 25% of capacity.
Well, and I believe Freightliner is actually part of the the Mercedes-Benz family of fine
firms. Right, it's
Daimler,
but the management is, you know, Americans,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is that under globalization, most of the trucks they make these days, they're making in Mexico. And most of this, that, and everything else is all being offshored. There is no job opportunities for people. And, you know, that's why that for people under 40 today, communism or socialism are not bad words. Specifically, one could say more so with socialism than communism, because the economy is not working for them. And, you know, this is, an oil trains is another aspect of the globalization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, people are missing that, you know. And also, if you want to talk about the thing with Islam, I've been intrigued that for over 20 or 30 years that Islam interest is contrary to Islam. And so I'm always wondering, is there a backstory that's not being covered, that there's a thing about capitalism? There's a cultural thing against capitalism in Islam that isn't being addressed with everybody. You know, is that why there's a cultural difference here of things that they find acceptable and we don't find acceptable? And, you know, that's, and that goes back to the, you know, English paintings and all this other stuff. Was capitalism and interest. And if you go back to biblical times, that's why they had Jubilee, because to them, people that were rich had stolen somebody's land because somebody needed to borrow some seed rice from them, and they took the debt.
Okay,
and
so
to give it back. They were supposed to give the land back after 7 years. They weren't supposed to keep their land for forever.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. 231-8187. We're talking about, I started by talking about the history of Turkey, and I did a very brief and probably inadequate job, but I wanted to emphasize the Armenian genocide, and I wanted to emphasize in the rise of Turkey the creation of a nation state which, while eschewing Islam in some ways, essentially was an Islamic state. And the Erdogan government is an autocratic system which is enriching one family and one set of people over the interests of a lot of other people, silencing the press, silencing dissidents, attacking the Kurds, and in general being bad guy, from my perspective at least, and is an instrumentally significant ally, a member of NATO, which was NATO, of course, being created to stop the advance of the Soviet Union.
Now, the caller just used a formulation, an us-them formulation to talk about Islam, characterized Islam and Muslims as the them, and used the we-us pronouns to refer to, I'm presuming, the United States and the rest of the developed Western nations. That's a false division. The only time that works, the us-them division, is if you're talking explicitly about membership in religious communities. We are a secular nation. We do not have an official religion. Therefore, the use of that us-them dialectic in this conversation is invalid.
Well,
it's that sort of thinking that's so problematic, especially in light of all these events we're talking about.
I look at things in popular cultural terms, and my father once said to me, this is a Christian nation, and don't you forget it.
Yeah, that's only true with respect to the fact that the majority of those people in this country who identify as religious identify as Christians. That's the only reason.
Well, but that's ignoring
the only aspect in which
that's ignoring
true.
The fact of enormous anti-Semitism, which was legitimized clear up until really until World War II, and really, really until the Holocaust.
Yeah. I'm not comfortable with an us-them divide talking about Islam.
I understand. I agree with you. I think that there's by emphasizing the religious difference and the traditional pressure, and it is traditional, of expansion, which is characteristic. There are only two monotheistic religions that absolutely believe in the expansion of their faith and the conversion of others as part of the religious process. And the fact of the matter is that those two religions are Christianity and Islam. And some Steve, our producer, said, well, you forgot the Jews. No, Judaism is not a religion urging conversion. It has no position to advance Judaism as a worldwide phenomenon.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Denise, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, go ahead. We're fine.
I think your conversation is enlightening, for one thing.
Thank you.
And I think it's kind of interesting to me how history just keeps repeating itself and that some people don't seem to realize that.
Oh, that's true. I find myself every day wishing people would realize that.
Well, you know, a lot of people are so self-interested and consumed in trying to live day-to-day life that and maybe they just don't understand or something. I don't know.
Could be.
Well,
I really don't.
I agree with you. I think the struggle, the day-to-day struggle of people, leaves them very much subject to analyses that essentially are fascist. And we're seeing that in the rise of the Trump, and we're seeing that all over Europe right now in the rise of kind of nationalistic and ethnocentric attitudes. The Brexit was in large part a reaction to the appearance of persons from Eastern Europe and from the subcontinent of India and Pakistan in England. And that is really just both a racist and a nationalist reaction, essentially blaming victims in a circumstance where things are far more complex and actually far more interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
What?
America is the only country, the United States of America, not South America, that ever has used the atom bomb.
Well, now that's true.
That's true.
We are also probably the only peoples on Earth that ever kidnapped African Americans.
We're not the only people on Earth. We're the ones who used it as a major force in our economic and political life.
Yeah, yeah. That's
I mean,
true.
Don't forget all of the British possessions in the Caribbean were essentially about the making of money through sugar and other products with those self-same Africans.
Yeah. And it really does take a village to raise a nation.
Okay.
In the United States of America. I hope you guys have a great day.
You too, and I appreciate the call.
Hey, Boo.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
bye.
You for the call. Brian writes to the Facebook page to say, I'm sure that you well-educated chaps know that the Constitution and Bill of Rights are based on the Great Iroquois Confederacy, which was all-inclusive rather than representative. I did not know that. Is that true?
It's an argument that has been made often, and I think it's certainly the Iroquois Confederation was an influence on the thinking of many of the founders of this country.
I did not know that.
I don't think it is as significant as some would have it be.
Hmm. Okay. Well, let's go back to the phones. Karen, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to pick up on a couple of points. One is the issue of Islamic inferiority to Christianity. And
okay.
I wanted to just expand the conversation a little bit beyond the idea that it's conversion-driven, the conversion-driven emphasis of Islam and of Christianity is the only way to compare the two religions. I think that Christianity has been used in the service of colonializing forces, in the service of imperial forces, and that it has been one of the cruelest religions because of the belief, the domination psychology that fuels it. But it's been used against African Americans. Can you imagine being an African American told to love your enemy as just after you've been whipped or just after your spouse had been ripped from you and your children had been ripped from you? Love your enemy, the gross irony of this religion. And in more modern context, we have women, the threat of women being in prison because they get abortions, with the most recent version of right-wing Christianity, and I think that it would propel more wars. The Ted Cruz version of Christianity. Have people forgotten George Bush's crusading notions for going into the Middle East to start with?
No.
I don't think Christianity's evolved. I think we're so blind to domination psychology that is behind these religions, both of them, that because we live in this country that's Christian dominated.
Well, you know, you're the last caller of the day. We won't have time to respond. You made some interesting points. I think it's a little more complex than you presented, but you make some interesting points, and I thank you very much for the call. And I really want to appreciate everybody who has called, and we'll try to do it right, and we'll try to keep you informed.
We'll be back at you next week.
And you ought to listen to us, K-Boo, if only for the music.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Nappy Farms, specializing in sustainable you-pick blueberry practices. Nappy Farms You-Pick Blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information, the number is 503-663-0885 or online at nappyfarms.com.
Staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy has come to the USA.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory, speaks on Water is Life. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints is